You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, then checking out on the prison bus. This is it, the apocalypse. Whoa, I'm waking up. I feel it in my bones. Enough to make my system flow. Welcome to the new age, to the new age, welcome to the new age.
Welcome to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. My name is JD. We do this live every single day of the week, Monday through Friday. It is Monday. Once again, it has happened once again. You always think it's going to happen to somebody else, yet lo and behold, here we are. I have to say again how much I love that theme song. Ah, my goodness, I had never heard of Imagine Dragons before, and I listened to a whole bunch of stuff by them this weekend. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to know about a new band that's actually, you know, doing some things that that matter, boy, I'll tell you what, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better band than them. And my good friend Jeff sent me a live video of them doing that song, which is called Radioactive, and just blew my mind. The energy these guys have on stage is outstanding. So I love the line in that about breathing in the chemicals, because unfortunately this weekend has been one for chemicals around here. If you guys got a chance to go to the website redpillreports.com this weekend, you will see a story featuring a photograph that I took out of my very own front door yesterday morning, and woke up to beautiful blue skies and the guys who are doing the heavy-duty aerosol spraying campaigns. I guess they don't get the weekends off, and perhaps they don't get the weekends off when there is a alleged polar vortex being potentially steered down here by HAARP. Makes you wonder what they're putting all this garbage in the sky for, but it is happening again right now, ladies and gentlemen. Perfectly beautiful blue skies being lined up, gridded up, chemicaled up, whatever you want to call it. It is happening right now. Once again, I hope wherever you are, the skies are much clearer than they are here in Missouri. I also hope that you guys had a wonderful weekend. I missed you guys this weekend. I have to say how much I enjoy being here, how wonderful it is to be part of the Red Pill Reports family and be part of the Truth Frequency Radio family. It has just been so fantastic, and I cannot thank you guys enough for joining me once again today. As I said earlier, we do a two-hour show live every day, Monday through Friday. The first hour, we spend going over as much of the pertinent news as I can possibly get to, which Rob does a fantastic job of lining out all these stories and articles on redpillreports.com. If you go there and you go to the show section for the day, you will not only find out who we're going to be speaking with in the second hour, but you'll also be able to see all of the articles that we at Red Pill Reports find to be the most important, and you can kind of follow along, give you a good opportunity to see how much of the news I cannot get to every single day, which kind of brings me around to another point I would like to make. We're starting a new tradition here at Red Pill Reports this week, you guys, and one of the things that we are trying to do on this radio show and with redpillreports.com is to build a network or a family of people who are informed, who want to be informed, and who want to take that information out and to continue to inform each other. You know, my stance on reality stems from the fact that all changes that need to happen first have to happen in your heart. You have to change yourself first before you can really do anything else. And once you've effectively done that, you can change your family, and then you can go out and you can work on your community. And if we were all going down that same road, you know, by the end of the day, we would be a country of interconnected communities that all had their acts together, which is kind of what we're trying to accomplish here. So in that vein, one of the complaints that we get from people all the time, or that I recognize as a complaint of people all the time, is a lack of action items. You tune into the show, you go to the website, you read these reports, and then that's kind of the end of the day. But unfortunately, I can only do so much in terms of, you know, getting this information out to you guys, but I need other people, the listeners, to understand their role in this also and taking up the gauntlet and running with some of this information. So we're going to come up with a plan to make that really easy for you guys. And what we're going to do is something called the Red Pill of the Week. Okay? So here is the gist of the idea. It's that we are going to select one specific headline from our website that we find to be the most important for the discussion for the week. And right now, what we'd like to have happen is once we give you this headline, we want you to take that headline and get it out onto a piece of paper over and over and over and over again. If you can get, you know, 50 headlines to one sheet of paper, that would be very, very awesome. And then what we can do is you can cut those up into individual little snips. And all they have to do is have the headline on them. That way then, when you're at the grocery store or at your church function or out at the community center or at the school talking to people, you don't have to get on a big soapbox. You don't have to say, oh my gosh, everything is going completely sideways and we've got all these issues to deal with. No, you have a pocket full of these simple pieces of paper with one single headline on them. And all you're going to do is you're going to give this to them and say, hey, have you guys heard about this? That's it. They go, they look it up, whether they want to or not, and that's how we can inform people. But you engage people in a non-combative way, in a way that suggests that you want to encourage them to look at some information. And so we have selected our Red Pill of the Week, and by we, I mean me, because nobody else talked to me about this, so I'm going to make this executive decision right now, which kind of dovetails into another part of this discussion about Red Pill reporters. We have two Red Pill reporters right now, and these are guys who write exclusively for Red Pill Reports, and part of our ongoing mission to bring you guys very, very interesting and unique information and perspectives that you're just not going to get anyplace else. That's the whole point of what we're doing here, guys. So, the Red Pill for the week is this headline as follows. It's time to end the Fed and IRS. And this is a story, I'm sorry, this is a report that was written by our Red Pill reporters, Kevin and Daniel. Both of them are phenomenal writers, and we're excited to have them on board. And this particular report talks about the Federal Reserve and the IRS being private institutions, and a lot of the things that we probably collectively already know, because those are reasons that you would tune into the Red Pill reports anyway. But this particular article is such an important foundation for an understanding of what's going on in this country. And if you're in a social group or you have people in your church, and a lot of people out there are still kind of on the fence, they have this inkling in their eye where they know things are not right, but they don't have any way to put their finger on it. This is the first thing they want to put their fingers on, guys. Well, we could talk about 9/11. We can talk about all kinds of other things that get people way off track and that are emotionally polarizing. But once you start talking about money and you talk about fractional reserve lending and you talk about the largest Ponzi scheme ever in recorded history on the planet, which you really only have to consider interest to understand how it's a Ponzi scheme, that is probably the most important cornerstone in your foundation for going forward and educating others, is understanding the relationship between the Federal Reserve, the IRS, and the United States general population. So this article that he wrote, that these two gentlemen wrote, is fantastic. I highly recommend. I want everybody to cut a piece of paper up and write that headline down 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 times if you can, and then just go out and engage the public. Get them to search that headline. Get them to come to the site and see what it is that they don't know, and this article will definitely bring them into the fold, so to speak. I also want to mention, ladies and gentlemen, that we are working right now with Daniel and with Kevin on another story. And this is an economic story. I want to make sure I don't overstate this, because I did just mention the Federal Reserve and the fractional reserve lending being the largest Ponzi scheme ever on the history of the planet. The story that Daniel and Kevin are working on now with the help of some very key insider guests will be, and again, I don't want to overstate this, it will be the largest story that has ever been on the internet. And I don't mean that lightly. I mean, this story that we are breaking right now over the next few weeks is going to be the largest thing that has ever been on the internet. And I'm not kidding about that. I want you guys to stay tuned. Just as a slight teaser, let me ask the question, how many of you out there believe that you own your own homes? I hate to break it to you, but 90% of you just got that answer incorrect. We're going to tell you why, so do stay tuned to the Red Pill Reports all week and every week for information like that that you just, as I said, you're not going to find anyplace else. And the story that's coming out soon is going to be groundbreaking, earth-shattering. You're going to want to have a tight hat on to keep your head from exploding. And it does, unfortunately, affect every homeowner in the United States right now. We're going to be naming names. It's going to be major, major, major business. So if you will, please go ahead and get the red pill of the week ready to go. It's time to end the Fed and IRS. I could not agree with that more. Want to mention also that in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined with by Joseph Meyer. Now, Joseph Meyer is a good friend of mine and another economic-type guru. But this gentleman, I've known him for several months now, and we've had many, many great conversations off the air. He has got almost five decades worth of experience in the equities market. So if you have some inkling that the equities market is not what it seems to be, and that investment is not what it seems to be, you're going to want to tune in for this phone call today. Joseph Meyer's one of the people out there that has got a written track record of accuracy that you can all go find at straightmoneyanalysis.com, and we are very excited to have him join us today. We also have a slew of amazing guests lined up for the rest of the week. The Red Pill Reports team has done such a great job of filling up the calendar with people. I'll just give you a couple of hints. Deborah Tavares is going to be on later this week, another situation where you're going to want to keep a real tight head on so your head doesn't explode. And we'll be talking to Roger Sales tomorrow also. So tune in all week. There's going to be a lot of fantastic information coming down, and we want to do that. I've also included something in the news today, and something I like to do and that Robert likes to do, as I said, is if you go to redpillreports.com and find the show link for the day, you can find all of the news articles that we're going to try and go over. But I added a new section this week, and I'm going to try and add keep this section going because we seem to be inundated with so much negativity. It makes you wonder if there are ever any positive stories out there. Well, we're going to have a section now called Something to Smile About, and every day I'm going to try and remind us that there actually is some humanity going on out there. And if it takes me all day to find it, I will find it. But I do believe somewhere out there, there is some good news. And speaking of good news also, one of the other things that we have in that daily news list, the daily news link list, excuse me, is something called a featured video. And it's a video that I think that people should be talking about and be aware of. And I included in today's news a video featuring Dale Brown. Now, Dale Brown is the founder of the Threat Management Center in Detroit, and is a private police force. Now, normally, those words together would, you know, not necessarily be something I would support, but I really, really want you guys to go and see this interview with Dale Brown, because honestly, this gentleman has fixed law enforcement, single-handedly fixed law enforcement, has instituted a program in Detroit, which is second to nothing in the world, as far as I can tell, for a quality law enforcement. And it's a system I'd like to see duplicated everywhere. We are going to try and get Dale Brown on the show. But before we are able to do that, I do want people to go and check out his link and his site and check out his video, because this is what we need to do. This is exactly it. Dale Brown has got the right idea. And so I want to draw some attention to that. And yeah, so definitely go check that out. Let's move into the national news. It was a very busy, busy weekend around the world, and it is still spinning, so there are more things going on right now. The war is on the brink of a new Cold War, according to Mikhail Gorbachev. Now, he is joining the ranks of several other countries. We had an article last week about Sweden saying essentially the same thing, and you know, Gorbachev is basically asking for trust to be restored through dialogue with Moscow, and suggested that the West should lift its sanctions against senior Russian officials over the country's support for the separatist rebels in eastern Ukraine. And he's, so again, you know, more drum beating, more warmongering from the West, and more countries are starting to believe that we are rapidly approaching Cold War 2.0. And I could not agree more with that assessment, so we will keep an eye on what's going on with that. An agency claims that Iran is still working towards nuclear weapons. And this is hours after the UN's nuclear agency said that its attempts to investigate allegations that Iran worked on nuclear weapons. An Iranian opposition group claimed to have some information showing the country is still working towards nuclear weapons. And the National Council of Resistance of Iran released information on Wednesday press conference saying that there were two explosive chambers built by Azarab Industries as part of a highly classified project that only two senior Iranian officials even knew about. And these two chambers were reportedly used to test high explosives as part of their nuclear development program. Of course, Iran is denying wanting or even thinking about working on nuclear weapons. And this is because Iran agreed back in February to work with the International Atomic Agency. And it was seen as kind of the country's willingness to try and reduce tensions over its nuclear weapons program, although the council has had a mixed record of credibility on Iran's nuclear activities. So are they going to build nuclear weapons? Are they working on nuclear weapons? I believe that they probably are. We've seen indications that some of the cyber warfare things that took down some of their initial uranium enrichment facilities were probably put there by operatives either working for the CIA or working for Israel Mossad. But that is what's going on. Nobody is standing down on Iran right now, and so we will wait and see what happens there. In a related story, Netanyahu on Sunday warned the six world powers, including the United States, against caving in to Iran's demands to pursue its nuclear program just so that Iran could meet its November 24 self-imposed deadline to conclude a deal with Tehran. Netanyahu, obviously being the prime minister of Israel, which is the fourth largest weapons producer on the planet, probably wouldn't like to have another nuclear adversary in the neighborhood, and so he has come out strongly against, you know, against that. New evidence coming out of Mexico in regards to these disappearing 43 college students. Horrible news. Looking like we're kind of coming to some kind of conclusion now. Suspects in the disappearance of 43 college students have confessed now to loading the youths onto dump trucks, murdering them at a landfill, and then burning their bodies and dumping the ashes into a river, according to Mexican authorities on Friday. So this is, on the trail of a very lengthy explanation of the investigation, the Attorney General, Jesus Carmen, played video showing hundreds of charred fragments of bone and teeth fished from the river and its banks. It says they're going to be very difficult to extract DNA to confirm that they are the students. But since the drug smugglers have essentially confessed, we kind of already know now what has happened there. And as a result of that and as a result of the slow investigation, students actually set fire to the door of the presidential ceremonial palace in Mexico City in the historic center late on Saturday, denouncing the apparent massacre of 43 trainee teachers. So the students are still taking to the streets, even though there is some resolution now. But I think that now that we have got some confessions, it's just tragic. I mean, these kids essentially went down there. They were commandeering public buses because they wanted to use them as part of their protests, and several of them were shot by police at the request of the mayor, and then obviously the rest of them were turned over to drug cartels. So just tragic, just absolutely tragic. A terrorist plot was foiled this weekend in England. Four Islamic terrorists planned to kill the Queen of England this weekend, but British forces foiled the assassination plot, apparently. The anarchist assassins intended to stab Queen Elizabeth II on Friday as the country celebrated 96 years since the end of World War I, an annual British jubilee, with numerous public appearances by Her Royal Highness. British police discovered the murder plot by the four terrorists ranging in age from 19 to 27 and conducted multiple raids in West London and Buckinghamshire to thwart their plan. Now, I am a little confused about how a plan to stab someone could possibly get out into the open. That seems like that's like a two-party person. Here's one guy that's going to do the stabbing, and here's the knife, and that's the whole plan. What else is there? But apparently these guys had loose lips, and their ship got sank. So they were unfortunately, or fortunately, foiled in their attempt to kill the Queen of England this weekend. Take that with a grain of salt, because who knows if that's actually true or not. So let's move on to what's going on with ISIS in Iraq. Barack Obama has authorized the doubling of U.S. troop levels for Iraq for the war against the Islamic State militants, further straining his pledge against, quote-unquote, boots on the ground. Obama ordered an additional 1,500 troops to Iraq on Friday to bolster the performance of Iraqi and Kurdish forces fighting in ISIS in ground combat. The training, the Pentagon said, is expected to last the better part of the year, raising questions about when the Iraqis will be able to wrest territory away from ISIS. The new troops, the Pentagon emphasized, will not be used in a combat role, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, similar to the roughly the same number of quote-unquote advisors who have been performing a similar role in Iraq since June. And troop levels in Iraq will now jump to 3,000. Meanwhile, U.S. warplanes are continuing their near-daily bombardment of ISIS targets from the air. And to finance this expanded effort, the White House has asked Congress for an additional $5.6 billion. That's B, as in boy, that is a lot of money, which will sustain operations like the airstrikes and associated logistics. This money also includes a $1.6 billion as a train and equip fund for Iraqi and Kurdish units to enable them to go on the offensive, said the budget director Sean Donovan, and an additional $3.4 billion will be used to support ongoing operations, including military advisors, intelligence collection, and ammunition. The rest would go to the State Department to support diplomacy. Sorry, that sentence made me laugh. Remember when the State Department lost $6 billion because they didn't have a system to take care of it? I wonder if they'll footnote this stuff for something, or perhaps they'll try and keep better track of it. I don't know. Just silly. So anyway, that's what's going on in the international news right now. There's obviously a lot more than just that. And if you want to go to the website, you can see a couple other stories that I was not able to get to because I want to jump to the national news right now. Probably the most important national story right now is coming out of the Washington Post and coming out of advisors of the White House saying Obama will act on immigration despite the GOP warnings to hold off. So President Obama firmly rejected advice from top congressional Republicans on Friday that he delay his promised execution action on immigration reform, dismissing calls from critics inside and outside his party to allow Congress to debate the issue next year. Now, over a two-hour lunch on Friday, House Speaker Boehner and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and all of their lieutenants warned Obama that his acting alone on immigration would spoil chances for bipartisan agreement on other issues in the newly GOP-controlled Congress. Seated with 12 top members of the House and Senate in the old family dining room, Obama shot back that he intended to proceed, saying that he had already waited almost 2 years for congressional action on immigration. He also added that his decision should not upend chances for cooperation on unrelated matters, according to aides familiar with the exchange. But this new focus on Obama's plan to revamp the immigration system by executive fiat came as the president is reportedly reviewing proposals to allow as many as 5 million illegal immigrants to stay in the United States, at least temporarily, according to several people familiar with his plans. He's expected to announce these intentions after returning from a visit to China, Burma, and Australia earlier this month or in early December, said those familiar with the subject. And, of course, nobody's going to say anything because they're all sworn to anonymity. So it does seem very apparent that Obama is going to move forward on his immigration policy changes, despite warnings from people around him that probably know better. And let's move on to an interesting story about Mitch McConnell that came across the pipe today. 90 pounds of cocaine were found on a cargo ship owned by the anti-drug senator's family. So a cargo ship connected to Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell was recently stopped and seized before departing from Colombia. During the search, Colombian Coast Guard agents seized roughly 90 pounds of cocaine. And these drugs were found on the Ping Mei, which is a vessel operated by the Foremost Maritime Corporation, which is a company owned by Mitch McConnell's in-laws, the Chow family. And this connection is not only relevant because the family connection, but also because the Chow family has been making huge donations to McConnell's campaigns. A point in fact, the Chow family has been funding McConnell since the late 1980s. And years later, in 93, McConnell married Elaine Chow and secured the Chow family as one of his primary sources for investment, a gift worth somewhere between $5 and $25 million made by the Chow family, made McConnell one of the richest senators in history back in 2008. What makes this case even more interesting, or ridiculous if you're me, is that McConnell is well known as a staunch prohibitionist, right? In 96, McConnell sponsored the Enhanced Marijuana Penalties Act, designed specifically to increase the mandatory minimum sentence for people caught with marijuana. Why is it that these people, government, I mean, that are responsible for bringing these drugs into our country are the first ones to try and put people into jail for using them? That just does not make any sense to me. And this article goes on to talk about the war on drugs being an insult to the intelligence of the American people, not to mention the fact that, you know, the government itself is responsible for bringing most of this stuff into the country as a severe conflict of interest, not to mention that many of them are, you know, on the are board members on private incarceration type of, you know, private incarceration organizations, prisons, things like that. So there's so much money to be made on prohibition. Is there any reason to believe that we'll ever see an end to it? I don't know. Rumors are swirling right now about Ferguson, Missouri. I don't know if any of you are following Ferguson. I follow it closely because it is close to me, and I have family that lives near Ferguson. But the rumor right now is that the grand jury decision on the Michael Brown shooting case may very well be announced this week. And many school districts are sending letters home advising parents to take caution as this grand jury announcement comes out. So we will keep an eye on that. The best guess that we've got right now is mid-November, according to the people who are closest to the case. Anonymous last week actually hacked in and said that they already found out what the decision is. And if that decision is true, then things are going to get very rough for Ferguson. So our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody there in the community. It's just more of the same. We're going to have to take a quick 3-minute break, guys. We're going to do some commercials. We'll come right back. We'll jump into a little bit more national news, get into the economy and the health. Keep it right here, guys. 3 minutes. This is your Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 10th day of November. I'm JD. Keep it right here. Thanks, guys.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA. Worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hempusa.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? Hempusa.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org today.
Sound Doctrine Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for sticking with us through that break. My name is JD, and this is the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 10th day of November, and we are actively trying to bring you your prescription for truth every single day. And so what we are talking about right now is national news. I'm going to jump right back into that. More homeless feeding arrests in Fort Lauderdale. You guys, this happened over the weekend again. Now, we had two stories last week about a 90-year-old gentleman who was arrested twice for feeding the homeless in Fort Lauderdale. And wouldn't you know it, other people got upset about his arrest and decided to do the same thing. So there were another round of citations and arrests from Fort Lauderdale police this weekend who broke up homeless feeding at Stranahan Park. A 17-year-old and a 25-year-old named Nikki Rye and a third person were amongst those involved with a program called Food Not Bombs, and they are all now in trouble with authorities for trying to do right by one another and by our society. Rye walked out of jail with a notice to appear. She said even the corrections officers and police inside were pretty upset about her arrest when they sent her off with the notice. Officials said the group violated Fort Lauderdale's new city ordinance that places strict restrictions on when and where and how groups can feed the homeless. Before these young people, obviously, the 90-year-old humanitarian and longtime volunteer Arnold Abbott made national headlines after he was cited twice last week for doing the same thing. And, of course, Fort Lauderdale Mayor Jack Sealer stood by the ordinance saying it does not stop the feedings altogether, just makes them cleaner and safer for everyone, which is, in my opinion, ridiculous, because what they're attempting to do is they're attempting to allow only church organizations with actual buildings to bring homeless people to those buildings to feed them from there, and saying that by taking the food out of there, violating health concerns. And again, you know, to me, it's just more money, guys. It's just revenue generation. These people are not in the loop getting their, you know, taxes from the food that they're selling, or they're not in the loop on, you know, state health concerns, things like that. Just it's ridiculous. It's patently ridiculous. If you can make a bologna sandwich in your kitchen and give it to somebody else, you should by all means be doing exactly that. So more homeless feeding arrests in Fort Lauderdale. I hope to hear about 1,000 more tomorrow, because I think eventually we will overwhelm the police department there and they will decide probably not worth their time. Maybe they should go out and do something productive like police themselves. A car bomb and a house explosion rocked a solar energy campaign in Louisiana over the weekend. The home and two cars of campaign finance director for a pro-solar energy candidate running for Louisiana's Utility Regulatory Board were blown up on Thursday last week. The house and both of his cars. According to reports, no one was injured in the explosions, and the authorities have yet to establish a direct link between the apparent attacks and the campaign's effort to promote solar energy. But the ATF is now involved with the investigations, and the finance director who was targeted, which is Mario Zervingen, who is a well-known political operative in the state, is taking a break from campaigning for the candidate he was working for, Forrest Bradley Wright. Now, Bradley Wright is campaigning on a program that allows Louisiana solar panel users to continue to sell their excess electricity back to utility companies. He's facing an incumbent, Eric Skrmetta, who seeks a cap on how much electricity solar customers can sell. They're competing in a runoff election for a seat on Louisiana's Public Service Commission, which sets the electricity rates in the entire state. So Bradley Wright has received most of his campaign funds from the solar industry. Now, do we think there was some foul play going on here? I don't know. You know, a gas leak, it could take out your house is one thing, but when you take out both the cars at the same time, That's a pretty big deal. That's a pretty big deal. So that is something else that happened this weekend. An ex-defense contractor gets a maximum sentence for bribery, and this comes out of Norfolk, Virginia. A former defense contractor and philanthropist was sentenced Thursday to 2 years in federal prison and giving a scolding by a federal judge for not completely owning up to his crimes. His name was Timothy Miller, pled guilty to paying a gratuity to a public official tried to apologize before the Chief U.S. Justice Judge Rebecca Beach Smith, but she chastised him anyway and essentially threw the entire book at him. His attorney spent like 2 hours trying to get her to allow him to have home detention. That didn't go well. He is going to be going to jail. Apparently, he paid $50,000 in bribes to the officials in exchange for $2.5 million in contracts working on ships for military and DOD type things. So not a good idea to be bribing military or DOD officials, because you will get caught. I will say, too, that the amount of waste that exists in that arena is staggering, the amount of waste. I actually met, and I'm not kidding about this, when I worked at the shipyard in Norfolk, I met a journeyman fire watch. Now, for those of you who don't know, when they grind or weld something as a contractor on a major ship or vessel like that, there is going to be somebody there to make sure a fire doesn't break out. That person is called a fire watch. Their job, the totalitarianness of their job, is to sit on their butt on a bucket holding on to a fire extinguisher. I met a journeyman. Okay, now journeyman is not a phrase that one throws around lightly, but this essentially means that this guy could go sit on his butt anywhere in the world and put out a fire if need be. $47 an hour this guy got to work 12-hour days. So want to talk about waste in the DOD? Holy cow, we could have some discussions. Let's move on to some economic news right now, because again, there are a lot of things happening in the world. Probably the largest thing on a global economic front was that Russia and China signed the second mega gas deal, and Beijing now has become the largest buyer of Russian gas. Now, during the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum taking place over the weekend in Beijing, Russia and China signed 17 different documents yesterday, greenlighting a second mega Russian natural gas to China via the so-called Western or Altay route, which as previously reported would supply 30 billion cubic meters of gas per year to China. Among the documents signed by Russian President Vladimir Putin and the Chinese leader, whose name I cannot pronounce, were the memorandum on the delivery of Russian natural gas to China via the Western route, also the framework agreement on gas supplies between Russia's Gazprom and China's CNPC, and the memorandum of understanding between the Russian energy giant and the Chinese state-owned oil and gas production. RIA added, and he was citing Gazprom CEO Alexei Miller, that the document signed by Russia and China on Sunday defined the Western route as a priority project for the gas corporation between the two countries. Miller also noted that with the increase of deliveries via the Western route, the total volume of Russian gas deliveries to China may exceed the current levels of export to Europe in the medium-term perspective. To put that in another way, guys, China has now eclipsed Europe as Russia's largest and most strategic natural gas client. So that happened over the weekend. China and Russia are moving forward. You know, what the far-reaching global effects on the energy market, how that's going to play into that, we don't really know as of yet. We will, of course, be asking Joseph Meyer about that in the next hour, so I hope all of you stay there. Let's look really quickly at what the markets are doing right now. It looks like the Dow is up 17,609, about 35 points up for the morning so far. And I'll tell you, I used to think that I had some kind of idea about economics, because there was this concept of supply and demand, but apparently supply and demand has flown out the window. Gold is now down again, another over a half a percent, another $7 down to $11.62. Silver sitting right around $15.59, and it looks also like oil has taken a tiny bit of a drip today, still hovering below the $80 mark, $78.36 right now. And for those of you out there who are interested in Bitcoin, Bitcoin's today's price on Bitcoin, $372 per coin. And there were some major Bitcoin developments over the weekend, actually. An enormous Bitcoin mine went up in flames in Thailand. And this was a super large Bitcoin mining facility, and it destroyed completely, burnt it to the ground, the 5-megawatt operation, which disrupted the cryptocurrency's entire network. And this article you can see is on QZ.com, but it did nearly cut down the overall hash rate for Bitcoin mining across the globe by about a third, by about 30%. It is back on the rise now, but we shall keep an eye on that. It does not look like it had too much of an effect on price. Before, Bitcoin was at about 355, and it's jumped up, as I said, 372 right now. So a little bit of movement because of that fire. And perhaps, you know, perhaps we're seeing the one portion of the economy where supply and demand actually does have something to do with the commodity price. And I'm going to ask Joseph about this here again in the next hour. But as we lose the ability to produce Bitcoin, which would obviously cut into supply, do we see a correlation with a rise in price? And there was a little bit of a rise in price, so maybe we're witnessing the one part of the economy that still functions. I'm not really sure. Again, we'll have some economic insight coming up in the next hour. In an additional Bitcoin story, the regulators are moving hot and heavy against the ATMs right now. So as Bitcoin businesses are forced to become compliant with federal financial regulations, they're being forced to give up their anonymity. And this is according to a VentureBeat report. And also according to this report, the Bitcoin community as a whole is very, very unhappy. And it's targeting the Bitcoin ATM manufacturer Robocoin. And they have come out and announced that all of its ATM operators will now have to enable anti-privacy software and hardware as part of new efforts towards compliance with the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. And the quote from the company is saying that we hoped operators would always get to choose know your customer versus non-know your customer documents in terms of being able to allow to service customers without forcing them to disclose who they are and things like that. But now it has emerged that that they're not going to have that choice. It's become clear that a registered money service business such as Robocoin cannot support non-know-your-customer machines anywhere in the market, and under their lawyer's advice, they cannot process anonymous financial transactions. So for investors unwilling to sacrifice anonymity in favor of compliance, we're offering to take those machines off your hands and to resell them. According to the company, their legal compliance is paramount to their continued legal operation, and so they cannot risk the future of the company to allow anonymity. And now, of course, if you know Bitcoin, anonymity is obviously one of the major selling points behind Bitcoin. But I would question, first and foremost, getting Bitcoin from an ATM. We do know all ATMs have a camera on them, and we know that they're going to be networked because that's just the way that Bitcoin works. So is there propensity for a Bitcoin ATM to take a picture and send it off to some regulator? Yes, I think that's probably in the cards. So Bitcoin falling more and more into the trap of being regulated. We will see what that does to the price of Bitcoin going forward. And that is what I know about that right now. There is a new vote happening in San Francisco as voters approve a minimum wage hike to $15. More than 100,000 San Francisco's lowest paid workers are in store for a pay raise after voters supported raising the minimum wage Tuesday to $15 by 2018. And now, already highest in the nation, San Francisco's minimum wage will continue to have that distinction with the passage of Prop J. And under this measure, the minimum wage increase on May 1st will increase on May 1st to $12.25 per hour and then rise gradually each year until it hits $15 an hour on July 1st of 2018. So we will keep an eye on that. I wonder if we're going to see, you know, the fast food industries and things like that moving towards automation. I can't imagine that when they're looking at their bottom line that they could think that $15 minimum wage would be a good thing. I'm of the opinion that since money is fake, everybody should be paid hundreds and hundreds of dollars an hour, because what's the point? You know, it's fake money, guys. Why wouldn't you want to just pay everybody ridiculous amounts of money? We already pay bankers ridiculous amounts of money for not doing anything. So, I think $100 an hour for everybody sounds great to me. It's fake money. And, there you go. Gold falling again on Monday as a short covering rally that boosted prices from the 4.5-year lows lost its steam. We did just cover, again, gold dipping down just a little bit more. This is probably going to be cornerstone of my questions for Joseph, because we had the article last week about the U.S. mint running out of silver, and it seems to me with supply being so low and demand being so high that we should see some sort of correlation between price, but we're not seeing that, which doesn't make any sense to me because I'm not smart enough to understand the economy, which is why we bring in the quality of guests that we do. So do stay tuned. In the next hour, we're going to try and get to the bottom of this metals market, figure out what is going on. And probably another story that a lot of people are not paying attention to right now is this Forex scandal that's been going on. There's been a two-year probe into the $5.3 trillion a day foreign exchange market. And right now, British regulators investing allegations of collusion and manipulation in the foreign exchange market could seek to fine a group of six banks as early as Wednesday this week. And these banks are Switzerland's USB, U.S. banks J.P. Morgan's and Citigroup, and Britain's HSBC, Barclays, and Royal Bank of Scotland. And they are expected to be fined a total of about £1.5 billion, which is a whole lot of money. And we have seen over the last few weeks these banks quietly preparing themselves for the fallout of this Forex investigation. So we will, again, another thing that we want to ask Mr. Meyer about today, and we're going to bring that to you guys here in just a few more minutes. Let's get into some tech news because there's still crazy things going on in tech stuff. Right now, Home Depot says about 53 million email addresses were stolen in a breach. Now, Home Depot obviously is the world's largest home improvement chain, and it said that 53 million email addresses were stolen during a recent breach of its payment data systems, in addition to some 56 million payment cards previously disclosed by the retailer. So this is a whole secondary disclosure here, guys, not just the 56 million payment cards and processing information that correlates to them, but now actual email addresses were gone too. The Home Depot is estimating the breach is going to cost about $62 million in order to recuperate from. But the company does say that although there were files stolen that contained email addresses that did not include passwords, payment card information, or other sensitive personal information, although we are talking about a secondary breach, and you wonder if there could be a correlation made between the information that was stolen initially and this new information that has been apparently stolen now. And since September, the company has implemented enhanced encryption of its payment data in all U.S. stores and said the rollout to Canadian stores will be completed by next year. But David Campbell, who is the CEO of EMV Technology, says this is really just putting lipstick on a kid, and the proper solution is to add chips and pins to our credit cards, which I have been saying over and over and over is obviously where all of this data breach nonsense is coming from. It's just they have this desire to upgrade their payment systems, and they need the public to go along with it, because how else are they going to get these credit cards into your hand? That's the only way to do it, to make you want it, because you're not safe without it. That's the way to do it. How about this story coming out of Germany about little microscopic robots that can swim through your eyeballs? That's right. The MicroSwimmer, developed by Max Planck Institute for Intelligent Systems in Germany, is shaped like a little scallop, so it can rapidly whiz through the vitreous fluid in the center of the eye. Now, these robots are made using a 3D printer. They twinge back and forth like a little mollusk on a hinge to propel it through the thick liquid in your eye. It also uses the power of an external magnetic field to move, which means it doesn't need a battery, which is key to its microscopic size. And although it can move through the vitreous fluid successfully in the eyeball, if you were to put it in water, it would be completely useless because of the thinness of the solution. And I only bring this story up because of the patently ridiculous next sentence that I'm about to say, which is, while the microscopic eye robot has the ability to swim through our eyeball, it has yet to be adapted to anything actually useful. So that's it. You know, they probably got a $1 million grant to develop a little microscopic robot that can swim through your eyeball. No idea what it's going to be used for. No idea. You know, we have proof of concept, but we don't have any idea what we're going to use it for. So that's fantastic. And other fantastic news, and when I say fantastic, I usually mean scary when we're talking about tech stuff. An MIT-led collaboration wants to show that programmable matter is no longer hypothetical and that it is ready for commercial development. In the November Scientific American, Thomas Campbell, Skylar Tibbetts, and Banning Garrett explained how researchers are creating one-piece objects that can change form or function intentional programmable fashion. So these are robots without the robots, as one of the authors put it. And when the authors wrote the article, they had only gone so far as to develop a proof of principle programming these programmable objects. For example, a flat 3D printed polymer sheet that could fold into an octahedron when it was submerged in water. But today, Tibbetts and collaborators, including his colleagues at MIT, along with engineers and designers, say that the material company Carbodix and the design firm Autodesk was revealed that the shape-changing sheets of wood fiber, textiles, hybrid plastics, and carbon fiber are already now ready for the market. One of the first things they're trying to do is to make programmable carbon fiber that could be used on automobiles to create morphable car panels to control aerodynamics. Now, I do think that this is interesting. I'm not going to lie. I still think technology is a tool that we can use for good or bad. But does anyone else see the direct correlation between what we're talking about here and the Terminator movies? Because programmable matter, especially when you add to it some of the other stories that we've had last week about, you know, emotional processing units, about these machines suddenly becoming autonomous in terms of drones. Now we have programmable matter so that these drones could change shape and, you know, carry out their own intentions. We are on a slippery slope here, ladies and gentlemen, and that's something I wanted to bring to you because I just found that to be absolutely stunning that that is the direction we're moving in. In another direction, a team of Japanese scientists, and I actually like this story quite a bit, they have developed a flying rescue robot with a device that can open doors to enter buildings hit by earthquakes or accidents, according to the Nikkei on Friday. And this robot was developed by a Japanese gentleman whose name I will not massacre, and he is an associate professor at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. And essentially, this is a search and rescue robot that has a small airbag on it with suction cups also. So it can go, it can find a closed door while it's looking for victims of earthquakes or something like that, natural disasters, suction cup itself onto a door, insert a small airbag between the door handle and the frame, and actually open the door mechanism and then fly inside and go look around and see if it can discover people. Now, I'm wondering if they're going to use that in conjunction with another story about cyborg cockroaches. That's right. Researchers at the North Carolina State University say they capitalize on the resilient nature of cockroaches by turning them into cyborgs that will assist rescue and relief efforts by fitting in tiny spaces in disaster zones that current robots can't fit into and picking up sound with tiny microphones. So I don't know. Would you feel good about being trapped under, under a building debris and your only hope is a cockroach? I don't know. I'm wondering what the PETA people are going to say about this too, because I can imagine they will be completely up and armed. But these cockroach cyborgs are called biobots, and they're equipped with tiny electronic backpacks that control the cockroach's movements. Now that is a trick, I have to say. But I do like the fact that we are thinking outside of the box in terms of trying to rescue people from horrible situations, and maybe the resiliency of the cockroach will be one of those things that allows us to move forward in the search and rescue arena in ways that we're not able to do now. I think that that is a potential. We'll just see if PETA gets on board with that or not. Moving on to some health news really quickly, the USDA has approved modified potatoes. Yikes. A potato genetically engineered to reduce the amount of potentially harmful ingredients in French fries and potato chips has been approved for commercial planting, according to the Department of Agriculture, and they announced this on Friday. This potato's DNA has been altered so that it has less of a chemical called acrylamide, which is suspected of causing cancer in people and is produced when the potato is fried. So what are we trading off here? Are we trading off Frankenfoods for something that we should know is bad for us already? Yes, I think that is the answer. And this potato is one of a new wave of genetically modified crops that aim to provide benefits to customers, not just to farmers, as the widely grown biotech crops like herbicide-tolerant soybeans and corn do, but the non-bruising aspect of this potato is similar to that of a genetically engineered non-browning apple developed by the Okanon Specialty Fruits, and they are still waiting regulatory approval. So the name of the game is that this potato can be jostled about, and it won't bruise, and it will effectively make it more cost effective to grow potatoes, I guess, and to fry them up as French fries. But if you needed a reason to not eat McDonald's French fries, there is yet another one for you. There's another fantastic article about Splenda as we're moving towards the holiday season. A lot of people, they take a lot of coffee during these holiday seasons, and there's an article that I wanted to point out from Natural Society talking about the connection between Donald Rumsfeld and Monsanto and how that revolving door effectively brought aspartame onto the market, and talking also about some of the negative aspects or potential negative aspects of using Splenda. And again, this is anything that's in the pink packet or the yellow packet. They're all, Splenda is only a generic term, or sucralose is the generic term. Splenda is the term that's owned by the company that, well, Monsanto in this particular case. But Splenda and sucralose consumption after alter the healthy microflora of the gut. They make it more difficult for your immune system to work as it should. It can also alter the efficacy of many drugs. While it should be better to treat your disease with natural remedies, if you are taking medications for cancer or heart disease, Splenda could be interfering with that. Splenda can also potentially alter your genes. This sounds familiar when it's coming from a company who splices and dices the genome like some kind of freak show, but par for the course for them. Splenda also causes obesity. The toxic substance alters blood sugar levels, which can lead to an increased chance of getting diabetes as well as obesity. And so many reasons not to use Splenda, guys. I gotta move along real quick because I want to make sure I get to my Something to Smile About story for today. And I'm very happy to say that it actually correlates to law enforcement for the first time in a long time. Got a good law enforcement story to tell. And this story comes from thefreethoughtproject.com. And it is about an off-duty officer who found $125,000 in cash in the middle of the road. And what did he do? Did he take it? Did he hold on to it while they were investigating him? Did they track down the owner and arrest him for holding cash? No. They gave him the cash back, just like they were supposed to do. How great is that? A law enforcement officer doing the right thing. It's almost unheard of these days, but that happened over the weekend. So there is truth to that mantra that there might actually be good police out there, guys. So anyway, we're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be back with Joseph Meyer. Thank you guys for keeping up with us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today. Stick with us. 3 minutes is going to be a big one, guys. Thanks for being here. We'll be right back.
Haven't you always wanted your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker? To get the word out about the fastest growing news talk outlet in the independent media? Joe Joseph here for TruthFrequencyRadio.com. KTFRN and LibertyStickers.com have teamed up to give you your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker for free. Just go to TruthFrequencyRadio.com/stickers today. And don't forget to visit our friends at LibertyStickers.com, home of the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. Their vast selection and quality of stickers are second to none. TruthFrequencyRadio.com, because silence is consent.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years. All for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. 910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at MUSA.org.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. My name is JD. We do this live every day, Monday through Friday. This is your Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 10th day of November. And the world is still spinning. The economy is still crazy. And in that vein, I wanted to continue our economic discussion that we started Friday with another key member of the economic insight world, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to be speaking now with Joseph Meyer, and Joseph Meyer is the president of Meyer and Associates. He's also a 42-year Wall Street veteran. He's also the president of Meyer and Associates as the editor of the macroeconomic and financial newsletter Straight Money Analysis. I cannot tell you, listeners, I can't recommend his newsletter enough. He does a monthly newsletter, and it is very informative and also relatively entertaining in terms of economic newsletters. I always get a good chuckle when I read it because there's so much going on in the world. Mr. Meyer's also appeared on Coast to Coast AM since about 2004. He's been on ABC, NBC, CBS News. He's been quoted in Foreign Policy Magazine as well as Forbes. And additionally, Mr. Meyer's is also a securities law expert and an arbitrator mediator for the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. And for those of you who don't know, FINRA is the largest independent regulator of securities firms doing business in the United States. We are very privileged to have Mr. Meyer joining us for the program today. Joseph, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, JD. Thank you and the Red Pills Report for having me this morning. Always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience.
Oh, it's just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing to have you here joining us today. I'm looking forward to all of the insight that you will bring to us. I think my first question, though, is there anything else about your background that you think people should know so they have a baseline understanding of where you're coming from and why your experience is so important to the issues that we're going to be talking about?
Well, I think when we speak of when I began investing, it was in 1966 as a public investor, as a small investor. And then upon returning from the Vietnam War in 1969, as you know, JD, I decided I wanted to become part of Wall Street. And I was able to do that in 1972 and become a fully licensed registered representative on Wall Street. I had just turned 25 years old. So my career has been a long one. It's been a diverse one. I've been a stockbroker. I've been a professional money manager. I've been an arbitrator mediator with FINRA now going on 20 years. And I started writing the StraightMoneyAnalysis.com newsletter, as you know, in 2009. And we have subscribers to that publication, JD, from all over the world.
Well, and as I said, too, you know, I look forward to my monthly copy because even though it is an economic newsletter, it is wildly entertaining. Some of the things that you're able to write in there really do bring a chuckle to my head, man.
Well, we write from the standpoint of experience. We write from the standpoint of having lived through the eras, which I think very few people have very little understanding of. And as I have said to you many times, you know, my belief is How can you understand the future when you have very little and no understanding of the past?
Well, then that brings me to my discussion that I want to start with today, which is, I thought for a long time there was a correlation between supply and demand in terms of commodities prices. And maybe I'm naive, but in looking at what's going on in the silver and precious metals markets, you know, gold, what is going on, Joseph? What is happening?
Well, I think the markets have undergone a radical change. I think when we look at certainly the periods of the prior commodity bull, which, as you know, was in the 1970s, the markets that we're seeing now don't even resemble what those markets once represented. As you know, we had intervention come into the markets starting after the conclusion of the last commodity bull in the early 1980s. And as I indicated in the most recent issue of the newsletter, that legislation that kicked off certainly the price suppression and the manipulation that is ongoing and increasing in all these markets has to go back to that piece of legislation titled the Monetary Control Act of 1980. As you know, J.D., it was an executive order signed by Ronald Reagan. It's still on the books today. It's still being enforced. And basically what that piece of legislation stated at that time was simply the government would be allowed to intervene in any market at any time for any reason. And that was the kickoff certainly to what we're seeing continuing and continuing to worsen as we get these very wide and volatile swings in all these markets and people are scratching their head and trying to figure out what is truly going on.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean, though, in terms of... In terms of a history or an agenda of intervention, what does that actually mean for the markets as they stand today?
Well, I think, again, we've got to put it in the context of what all the world's central banks have been doing and doing very aggressively since we had the financial crisis going back to 2007 and 2008. I think we did have significant intervention in the market, certainly leading up to that crisis, but I think in a lot of instances it was well camouflaged and people were not aware of what was really happening in these markets. But I think when we see the coordinated efforts between the central banks, certainly to strengthen the dollar and more importantly suppress gold and silver, and we're seeing it now when we speak to crude oil prices as well, you know, these markets, I think, have to be approached, J.D., honestly, on the basis where you follow the primary trends, you're in for the long term, you understand what's going on, and you understand the best way to be part of these markets and be part of these markets successfully and profitably.
Well, and how then are you able to make accurate predictions in a market where it seems like it's more intervention than it is actual markets happening nowadays? I mean, the indexes all seem to be purely based on intervention. So how do you take that intervention into account as you're planning your investment strategies, Joseph?
Well, it's an excellent question, JD. I think you have to understand cycles, number one, how long they last, how they begin, and how they end. And I think you've got to go back and look at prior markets, as I've said many times in the interviews we've done. Prior markets have similarities to them, although they have very distinct differences. And I think you have to go back and you have to look at prior periods, certainly when we had bull trends in force, and we've got to take a look at the major trends as they appear and whether or not they're still valid. And if the answer is yes to that, can they continue to move higher? Mm-hmm. And then I think lastly, you've got to understand the bigger picture, which affects these major trends. And as I said repeatedly in the newsletter, I believe the major primary trends are certainly going to be far more powerful than any manipulation, suppression, or intervention over the long term. I think the markets inevitably always win out, JD. I still believe that.
Okay, so given all of that then, there still is some investment strategies. You know, I guess my question is, what has changed since the 70s to now in terms of how you're playing your investments? I mean, is this more of like the building is on fire, I need to get in and get what I can and get out if I have the stomach for it type of investing that's going on?
Well, I think you have to understand volatility has now become a byproduct of all these markets. Yes, we had volatility in the 70s and 80s, but certainly not to the degree that we're seeing volatility today. Secondarily, I think we get people coming into these markets now with a very short-term investment horizon. The serious money all through my career, which is going on almost 50 years as an investor, has been made over the long term. I think the buy and hold strategy, if we're in the right sector of the market for the right reasons and we're in the right stocks within those sectors or the right commodities within the sector of the market that we're interested in, we have to buy them at a reasonable valuation. We have to put them away, and we have to continue to add to them any time we're handed them on a platter where we get price weakness, which is not, in my humble opinion, changing the bigger picture inevitably where these commodities and or quality stocks are headed.
And all of this type of information is available in your newsletter, right, at straightmoneyanalysis.com?
Well, we write about in the markets, as you know, what you need to know, why you need to know it, and what you can and should be doing about it. You know, we write from the experience of over the years, over the decades, over the various bull and bear markets, what has worked and what hasn't. And what have we learned from prior periods when we've seen similarities? And what are we doing different this time than what we've done in the past? And we try to outline why we think what we are doing differently, because I think you have to adjust your investment strategy with different bull markets accordingly. And I think people want to go by the old rules of the road, which quite frankly, JD, they no longer work.
Yeah, they don't seem to. I mean, and that brings me back to precious metals again. You know, I don't know what you know about the global demand for precious metals, but I would certainly like to know anything that you do know about the global demand for precious metals and how that is somehow, it doesn't seem to be correlating into the price of physical around the world.
Well, again, I think when we see the suppression, the manipulation, the intervention, and we look at certainly the amount of physical that's available for sale in the market, we've got a dichotomy between the papers market and the physical market. And I think when we see the central banks of the world still accumulating to buy gold, although they'll tell you gold is a relic, it no longer has validity in the monetary system. Well, you know, if that's true, why are they continuing to buy it?
I mean, they are hoarding it right now. Look at Russia and China are just soaking up gold as quickly as they can
possibly. But they're talking out both sides of their mouth, and it doesn't make any sense. If you go back all through history and you look at gold, as you know, it's a storage of wealth and a hedge against inflation. Nothing is ever going to change that. If we go back and we look at the periods when we had stability, certainly in the monetary markets, is when we were on a gold standard. We got off the gold standard. That's when all this nonsense began, August 15th, 1971.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think then, given the soaking up of precious metals that some of these large governments are doing around the world, do you anticipate that gold is going to be returning as an instrument of settlements around the world?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. I think when we look at who's accumulating gold and continue to accumulate it very heavily, we've got China, Russia, and India. We've got the BRICS countries. There is no question we're going to see, probably sooner than most people would want to believe, a currency in the world going to be backed by gold, whether it will be China, whether or not it'll be another nation. It may be the Swiss. As you know, we've got that gold referendum vote
right
coming up on November 30th, and I think it's going to be historic. And if that vote is yes, and I strongly believe, unless there's something here that I don't see, that it will be, I think it's going to change the dynamics of the precious metal bull market once and for all. And I think we're going to see gold certainly start a fresh new up leg to the upside, with silver following as well very closely, JD.
Do you feel that gold and silver right now have an intrinsic value that's much higher than what we're being quoted on the televisions by the talking heads, though?
Oh, I don't think there's any question of that. I think gold is very undervalued, very misunderstood, very underowned. You know, if we go back to the prior bull market, even at the height of the commodity bull, even at the height of the precious metal bull in 1980 and or 81, even at those levels where we saw 850 gold and 4945 silver, we only had 5% of the investing public in the precious metals right at the top. Hmm. We currently, at this depressed level, have less than 1% of the investing public in the precious metals. So putting those two numbers together where we saw very, very high interest in getting into the precious metals right at the end of the move, and here we are, I think, at a point where we're getting ready to start another significant advance, and very little interest on the part of the public, very little interest in current asset allocation to be in the precious metals at any price. So I think that is telling you this bull market is far from over, and I think we're going significantly higher, JD. I truly do.
And you're specifically speaking about the commodities market and precious metals, because it looks like, from reading the last newsletter that you sent me, that you're kind of calling the equities market topped out. Is that the case?
Well, I feel we're making a significant top in the equity markets. We've been looking for the top, as you know, for quite some time. Tops take considerable time, just as bottoms do, to formulate in a market. You know, I did advocate that I thought the top would come in between October and year-end, and I based that on what we had seen similarly in the 2000 top and then again in 2007. As you know, JD, both of those tops came in the month of October. So I do think we're making a top. Doesn't mean it's today or tomorrow, but I've advocated in the latest issue of the newsletter, no longer buying the dips, but selling the rallies on balance and taking money off the table.
And then taking that money off the table so that you can invest in precious metals would be the right
thing. Oh, I think that's exactly what one should be doing. If you can take your profits out of the market and take them before somebody else makes the decision and takes them for you, you'd be well advised to take that money, come into the precious metals, because I think we've got one market making a bottom and the other market making a top.
Can you tell us, if you would, sir, what's going on with the dollar index right now? Why does there seem to be such a drastic jump in the dollar index? What's going on behind the scenes?
Oh, I think everybody's trying to move into what they want to conceive and believe is the safest worldwide currency. I think it's a temporary phenomena. I think there's a lot going on beneath the surface that we're not aware of. Again, I come back to the gold referendum, and if that passes, I think that's going to change the dynamics on all these markets. And I think the dollar could very well here right now be making a four-month top, and I'm looking for it to start a decline, JD.
Roger that, man. So if you had to put an actual intrinsic number in terms of value on an ounce of gold and an ounce of silver, could you do that right now?
Well, I think, again, if we go back, and as you know, I like to use a yardstick to previous markets. If we go back to 1980, we had gold at 850 and silver, as I said, at 49.45. If we adjust those two markets just for inflation, and that's going on the statistics that have been reported, which, as you and I know, we don't believe in the first place, but even going back and using those inflation statistics from 1980 to where we are currently, which are very, very conservative, and I think I'm being kind in calling them that, gold would have to be right now about $2,650 an ounce, and silver would probably have to be north of $140.
Wow.
And that's just going back using a yardstick from 1980 with the inflationary numbers we've been given up to this point.
And it could be argued that those are fairly conservative numbers, correct?
Absolutely. Right. Very, very conservative. I don't think they're anywhere near reality of what the true numbers have really been. I think when you go back, more importantly, we have not seen consumer prices fall in any one year since 1955. And I think I mentioned to you in a previous show we've done together, wages have been flat, adjusted for inflation, since 1965.
Ugh.
So I think those two statements in itself paints the picture that the metals are selling at a significant discount to reality. And I think, once again, you know, they can drive this paper market down all they want. Try to come into the physical market and try to buy physical at those price levels.
Oh,
it's impossible.
It's impossible. Could you do us a favor, for those who don't know, could you dive just into briefly how that paper market is controlling, or how they use that paper market to control the physical price? How does that actually work?
Well, I think you've got a lot of investors that are not aware really what goes on in the physical markets versus the paper markets, and they don't understand the mechanics and the leverage that is utilized in these markets. You've got people long simultaneously short, long and short at the same time in various strike months of the commodity. And you've got a lot of intervention, as we touched on earlier, in all these markets coming in at times when the markets are most vulnerable, certainly to a decline. And I think the decline in a lot of instances because of this intervention has certainly been greatly accelerated.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about something I saw one of the talking heads say the other day. I think we had a kind of a flash dip that took place maybe 4 weeks ago or so, where we had a pretty significant drop in one day, and they came on the glowing box, and the lady said, well, it was a fat-fingered mistake. And I thought to myself, that's about the same thing as saying I can't find Lois Lerner's emails because her hard drive crashed, right? I mean, there's, in a world of high-frequency trading, is there even such a thing as a fat-fingered mistake anymore, Joseph?
Well, we'd like to believe that, but you and I know that's not what happened,
right.
And that's not what's going to continue to happen. You know, people have to understand, and I know people are very bearish on the metals because the decline has been very long drawn out and very painful. But as I said in the recent issue of the newsletter, if you look at where gold began the bull market, and we touched upon this, I think, in another show we did together recently, but gold started at $255 an ounce, and silver started the bull market in 2001, right around $4 an ounce. If we look at the advance which we had in the 13 years, we had gold go to $1,920, and we had silver go to over $49 an ounce. If you take a full 50% retracement of the entire gold bull market, and a 50% retracement is not really out of the ordinary, because prior to making the last run to the upside, we had 50% corrections along the way to the $1,925 an ounce level. A full 50% retracement of the entire bull advance comes in at 1080, JD.
Oh.
As you know, we traded down to 1140, so you're roughly at $60 an ounce at the worst so far we've seen in the decline, away from a full 50% retracement. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that we need a full 50% retracement to put the bottom in place. We might have seen the lows last week at 1140. Until proven otherwise, I think we did.
Well, that's significant, because I've heard lows, you know, people predicting lows down in the 600s, you know, which to me, if an ounce is worth 2,600, any of these numbers to me are an absolute buy. But it would be nice, obviously, to get more for your fiat money if you can do it. So it is, you know, it is important to try and at least figure out where the bottom of this thing might be.
Well, I think another yardstick that people should look at, as you know, I did an interview recently on Market Views Television out of Athens, Greece. And the host of that show asked me a very distinct and pointed question. He said, Joe, what do you think of the production cost of an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver? He said, you will agree, we have them both selling now below the cost of production. I said, absolutely. I would believe that probably the production cost of an ounce of gold is probably around $1,350 to $1,400 an ounce. And I would believe the production cost of an ounce of silver is probably anywhere from $2,150 to $2,350 an ounce, JD. So with these metals selling at a deep discount to production costs, how can anyone reason that this market is not making a significant long-term bottom?
Well, and I can't imagine that any, you know, any companies out there who are you know, tasked with getting the stuff out of the ground are excited about any of this at all. One question that I do have, or that this kind of makes me speculate on at least, is, you know, if the governments of the world are moving towards getting as much physical as they can, then could the suppression of oil that we're seeing on the side also play into that as well? You know, could they have decided we're going to suppress oil so that the cost of mining gold and silver isn't as dramatically as effective as it could be? Do you think that there might be some agenda at play there, or are these two separate issues we're talking about?
Well, I think there is an agenda. I think, you know, when we look at the bigger picture, there may be two separate issues. But, you know, getting back to what is going on in the physical market, as you know, JD, it was recently reported that we had record sales of silver American Eagles, all-time record sales. What does that say? And they've even suspended sales temporarily on the silver American Eagles. They've run out of silver to make the coin.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, that's so significant to me, and that's still why my brain just hurts, because I watched the price, you know, again today, it's down another 0.5% today. And if we're drying up physical supply, and people are looking at that $15, $15.50 as, you know, an absolute buy all the time, it seems to me like the prices then should just be shooting back up through the roof. But that's not what we're seeing.
Well, I think when we talk about the media, they tell you what they want you to know, not what you need to know. And they never talk about the positives, and there are positives that are ongoing in these markets. They continue to beat the negatives. They continue to tell people why this is a terrible investment. And as I've said recently in the newsletter, it's such a terrible investment, and if you take a look over the long term of what the markets have done in the last 13 years, when we talk to the equity market, certainly in reflection to the precious metals, the precious metals, even after this long and painful correction, on a percentage basis, has outperformed the Dow and outperformed the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. So I think when you take a look at where these markets have gone, as you know, in 2000, we had the Dow 11,780, and then in 2007, around 14,100, and here we are roughly 7 years later in the low 17,000 area. But you go back to 2000, where could you get an investment from 255, went to $1,930, that is still selling it far more than if you got in at a reasonable level than you would have paid for it at it where it's currently selling? How can you characterize that as a terrible investment? I don't get it.
I don't either, which is, you know, why I want to speculate on what the agenda is from the mainstream media. Why? I mean, are they just putting people in a position to tell us things because they're incompetent, or are, you know, is there an agenda that underlies what these mainstream media people are trying to tell us?
Oh, I think there is an agenda. I think if you go back over the last 13 years, as you know, when you look at the money that was lost in the dot-com bust around $5 trillion, mm-hmm. if you look at the money that was lost in the housing crash was about $7 trillion. And I've said repeatedly in the newsletter that I believe when the bear market takes hold in the equity markets, we could cut valuations from these levels in half.
Wow.
I think this market represents historical, unprecedented risk that people just don't see. They want to believe trees grow to the sky. You got the media championing this, encouraging people to get into this move, which I think is very late and almost terminal.
Right.
And when the losses unfold, and we know they will, and they'll be in the trillions of dollars, and the metals go one way, and the equity markets and the bond markets go another, they'll be alibiing all the reasons why, you know, it's still a good time to get into the markets, that you got to be in them for the long term. And I think we're going to see the commodity bull probably last another decade, and we could be looking at a bear market, which, again, as you know, I'm a historian on the markets. After the top in October 1929 at 381 in the Dow, do you know how long it took for the Dow to get above 381?
I don't,
it took 25 years till 1954.
All right, we've got to go to a quick break. I hate to interrupt you. We're going to come back in 3 minutes, and we're going to continue to talk about that with Joseph Meyer, my guest today, Straight Money Analysis. This is the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Gardening.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want.
Ever since our Google Plus integration, we've seen a 30% reduction in racist and bigoted comments. People are even starting to notice the complete lack of bigoted comments, and frankly, they miss them. To make up for this deficit, we have added auto-commenting bots to YouTube Plus that can be set to either type racist or hateful comments. Similar to the auto-comment bot, we've created the auto-spam bot, which allows terrible YouTubers to beg people to watch their horrible excuses for videos they put out. These comments can go out to every video they've ever interacted with.
Hey guys! So we're like really wanting to be filmmakers on YouTube, and we'd totes appreciate it if you come watch our videos and comment, like, and subscribe. That'd be totes amazeballs. Yeah, we really like subscribers.
YouTube Plus. We own you!
The brother's gonna work it out.
Staunching Tyranny with Jim and Jeff Staunch.
Monday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Radio broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for sticking with us through that 3 minute break. I want to encourage everyone to go and support Truth Frequency Radio, make a small donation, help keep us at the very tip top of the pile in terms of alternative news and information and entertainment, things like that. We are part of the greatest network in the history of the world, and would like to keep it that way. And remember, everybody, that they are listener supported, and very much appreciate any donations that you can make to the site. My guest today is Joseph Meyer of StraightMoneyAnalysis.com. That's another website I would encourage everyone to go to. And I want to just make a quick plea to everyone out there to I want you guys to bite the bullet and subscribe to his newsletter. This newsletter that he does every month, guys, is just chock full of important information, and you can tell with the experience that Joseph has that this is information you're not going to get anyplace else, and a lot of work goes into creating those newsletters. So we want to support him, want to support his site, and encourage people to become subscribers to that. Again, Joseph Meyer's website is straightmoneyanalysis.com. Would appreciate everybody going there and giving him some good feedback on the show today as well. Joseph, I want to get into the scary stuff, my friend. We spoke yesterday a little bit about what you called the oily rags in the room. And now these are oily rags that could each individually erupt into what would essentially become a global economic meltdown. And I wanted to see if perhaps you could rate these scary things on a scale of scariness, if you will. The first one in my mind, first one is obviously the outstanding derivatives market. What's that number actually look like? And what do you think in terms of whether or not that could be the tinderbox or be the brush fire that starts the tinderbox up with the derivatives market?
Well, I think when we speak to derivatives, JD, there's no doubt that we're utilizing more leverage in these markets than ever before. I think history will look upon this when it's said and done as the leverage being unprecedented and certainly being allowed to be unprecedented for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. I think when you take a look at the risk that's in the market, and you and I have touched on that earlier, I think the risk in this market is very, very great. I've never seen in my career such complacency on the part of investors as to the risk that these markets truly represent. You know, getting back to gold quickly, and I know people think it's a terrible investment, and you and I disagree. You and I agree it's a wonderful investment, and people should be buying it and putting it away, because I think at the end of the day, when the smoke finally clears and the oily rags catch on fire, you're going to be glad you own some gold and silver. But I think more importantly, and I think I touched on this with you in a previous show, two times in history, J.D., which very few people realize, 1 ounce of gold bought the Dow. It bought it in 1932, and it bought it again in 1980. And I believe in the rule of threes, and if something happened twice, I think there's a very high preponderance that it will happen a third time. The question is, if 1 ounce of gold for the third time buys the Dow, at what level will we see that take place? I think that's open to considerable argument, but I've got to believe, and I think I've indicated to you this before, I believe the equity bull market, which began in March 2009, 6470 in the Dow, as you know, and 670 in the S&P 500, will be completely retraced.
Wow.
I think it'll take a number of years. I think it'll be a long, drawn-out bear market, but I think inevitably we will see the averages back to those pre-March 2009 levels. If I am right on that, and up to this point I strongly believe that I am, we will see gold trade north of that 6470 in the Dow area. We may bring the numbers more in line. One ounce of gold by the Dow at 10,000. I think that would be probably best case scenario. But I gotta believe at some point we're gonna see once again in our lifetime 1 ounce of gold by the Dow, JD. I truly believe it.
I mean, can you even imagine the what would have to take place that to be the case? I can't even imagine the chain of events that would have to go down. That would make something.
Well, it happened once before. Look what happened in 1980. Look what happened to that crisis in 1980. You know, I was in that commodity bull market. I speak from the experience of having been there, not having read about it in the history books.
Right.
As you know, I write about history, but I write about the era in which I lived. You know, the four decades we've been in the market and almost the five decades as an investor. I write about the reality of having lived through and been part of those markets. You know, you've got to look at gold. You know, it took 9 years for gold to go from 35 to 200. It took 7 months after that to go to 850.
Right.
People don't realize it. The blow-off move took place in less than 7 months. Now, could we be looking at something similar in what is ahead of us in this market? I wouldn't rule it out.
Wow. Well, I wanted to get back on derivatives for just a second.
Okay, go ahead.
I would love to know, in your opinion, what the totalitary, you know, what's the total number that we're looking at in terms of outstanding derivatives in the global economy, and what do you think the effect of that coming to light is going to have?
I think it's probably north of $100 trillion, and that may be a very, very conservative figure. I think the leverage being applied to these markets is, as I said earlier, not only historical, it's unprecedented. I think at some point, I don't know which one of these oily rags, as we've talked about, is going to catch on fire first, but it's going to lead to a full-blown collapse.
Oh, I totally agree. And I'm curious, too, if you've been following the banks around the world seem to be quietly preparing for the results of this Forex investigation. Can you, for the people who are not familiar with what this Forex investigation entails, can you kind of extrapolate on that and talk about what some of the long-term effects of that might be?
Well, we've seen, again, tremendous leverage applied to these markets. We've seen tremendous volatility, both up and down. I think these markets have been very vastly distorted. You know, you look at the markets, and you touched upon this earlier, you try to get a handle on what's really true fair valuation. And you're unable to do that because you're looking at distortions that just honestly don't make any fundamental sense in the market, period.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that because it makes me realize that I'm not crazy and that all of these things not making sense isn't necessarily a reflection on my own ability to understand them because, you know, it seems like, you know, fundamentally from top to bottom that the laws of economics cease to exist right now.
Well, I think we're looking at markets being elevated. I think we're looking at an illusion, and we're looking at people want to believe, and I'll characterize it again for all the wrong reasons, what's happening and why they think it's good. I don't believe anything that's happening is good. I think when you take a look, and again, you apply a yardstick, previous periods, previous markets, previous economic cycles, JD, none of this makes any sense to me.
But that's not good, Joseph, because you're the guy that's supposed to be the expert here, man. That's why I brought you on the show.
I mean, if I could see any relevance, if I could see, you know, any reasoning that has a historical, cyclical, or market basis to it, maybe I could understand and appreciate what's happening. But I'm seeing the complete opposite of that.
Yeah, me too.
This is an upside-down economy. You know, we're looking at things, you know, we were told, as you and I discussed in another recent show, we were told deficits don't matter, interest rates don't matter, energy prices don't matter. It's different this time. It's always different until it's not. And I think nothing matters till it matters, and then everything matters. Mm-hmm. And when everything matters, it's a little too late to worry about specifically what thing do you believe is truly going to matter, because they all do.
Right, right. Well, and that brings me to the mortgage crisis that we're going through right now. I, a lot of people are of the opinion that that is kind of behind us, but you're not of that opinion, are you?
I've never been of the belief that housing has put in place a long-term bottom. You know, I will agree we've had a correction. I think it's been painful, and I think it's been deeper than most people would have wanted to believe. But, you know, I come back again to what we had witnessed in prior housing cycles. As you know, J.D., housing used to go up by the rate of inflation, 2, 3, 4% a year, and I'm talking now in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Right.
On balance, pretty much if you averaged it out, a house went up by the rate of inflation. What we witnessed starting in 2000, early 2000, we had a home going up 20% a year for 5 years.
Wow.
And that's what had led to the mortgage-backed securities, led to the leverage, led to people coming in and qualifying to buy these homes that truly did not belong in real estate for a variety of reasons. These were people that had literally no down payment, in a lot of instances, no down payment. They didn't have a minimal 10-year credit history. They didn't have long-term employment of at least a decade or more. And they didn't actually show any kind of meaningful credit worthiness. Mm-hmm. And they were allowed to buy these homes going in with the mindset of, I'm going to sell it to someone else at a higher price. All I have to do is live in it and it'll make me rich.
Right.
A home was never designed to make you rich. It was designed as a place to raise your family, live, someday pay off the mortgage and retire, and finish out your years in comfort knowing you no longer had a mortgage. Mm-hmm. Housing turned into hamburger flipping, and you had people coming in buying, flipping homes in the hope that they could sell them for a higher price than they paid. Well, when the economy soured and the funding going into housing dried up, everybody tried to get out at the same time. There were no buyers.
Right.
The house was so grossly inflated that any equity the individual had that he put into the home, he lost. And it came down to paying a mortgage on a losing asset that continued to lose value. And as I said many times as we led up to the peak in housing, it was cheaper to rent. You could rent for half the cost of owning. Why did you want to own?
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm a renter because of that specific reason. I watched all this go down and I thought about buying a house at the time, but something in me just said, you know, this isn't going to turn out well. So I choose to be a renter for that exact reason, and I think it's probably
safe. There's a tremendous amount of inventory that is still being carried on the books of these major lenders. I think they've not brought them to the market because the market is not strong enough to absorb the number of homes that would hit the market.
Right.
And I think at some point, once we start to see interest rates go up, and again, that's not a question of if, it's when, they're going to bring these homes to the marketplace. And I've seen this before. As you know, I was a contractor for FDIC and Resolution Trust in the late 1980s. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't get involved on the residential side of what was happening, I was more or less involved in the commercial side, non-performing structured assets of failed thrifts that had to go to the marketplace for liquidation. But the point being, you know, I witnessed prime commercial property go to the auction block and bring pennies on a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we had the oil bust that took place in Texas, I mean, we had office buildings go to the block no one even bid on.
Wow.
So I know what can happen when these kind of assets are brought to the marketplace. They bring very little money, JD.
Okay, so we're going to continue to consider the mortgage crisis as part of that collection of oily rags in the room then, aren't we?
It never went away.
Okay. Well, I want to know also then about, you know, I'm of the opinion that we're witnessing the suppression of oil right now, the price of oil that we're attempting to once again disrupt the Soviet Union and Venezuela teaming up with OPEC. But I want to know if you agree with that, first and foremost, that there is some suppression going on, and then what you think, if there is suppression of that price, what that might have as an effect on the global economy going forward.
Well, I think oil is certainly confirming now the weakness, even though it's playing a little catch-up to the weakness we had seen in gold and silver. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I think when you look at the worldwide demand for energy globally, no question China has an insatiable appetite for crude oil.
Right.
You know, they've doubled their demand for crude oil just over the last 4 or 5 years, and it's probably going to double again. So there's no question there's going to be tremendous drawdowns of energy, not only by China, but by India now as they step into the footprint of developing their infrastructure very similarly to what we've witnessed over the last decade and beyond that took place with China. Mm-hmm. So India is going to fill the void of certainly what we had witnessed going back a decade ago with China. And I think when we talk about Russia now being a major oil producer, you know, they've got a vested interest in oil prices trade significantly higher than they are.
Right.
The Saudis have indicated that they believe, whether or not, you know, you and I agree, a fair price for a barrel of oil is right around $100. Okay. So I think we are seeing oil prices temporarily weaken. I don't believe these oil prices will stay down here, and if they do, for no significant amount of time.
Okay.
And we better enjoy these so-called cheap gasoline prices while they last.
Yeah, but less than $3, everybody's all excited. I'll tell you, man, I'd like to get back to the sub $2 range personally.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize if you go back when the real crisis started with oil prices, and we talk about certainly, you know, what was ongoing with the Arab oil embargo in 1973, and we talk about what went on with the Shah of Iran when he was forced out of Iran in late 79, early 80. You know, going back, and again, to put things in perspective, we've had oil trade, as you know, to 144 a barrel.
Right.
You know, going back in the early 1970s, how much a barrel of oil was? Take a guess.
Oh, 45, 50 bucks?
Buck and a half.
A buck and a half. Holy cow.
That's why gasoline was 35 cents.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
So that's the kind of increase we have seen in oil prices, certainly through the decades. And I think we're going to see significantly higher oil prices. Oil will never be replaced, I believe, certainly in our lifetime, to the degree that a lot of people think it will with alternative energy. As I've said in the newsletter many times, oil is the lifeblood of industry. Nothing's going to change that. The Saudi oil fields are very aged. Their production is a lot less than they want to admit. They're using seawater now to maintain pressure at the wellhead, to try to keep production up and drive down prices. The Saudis had peak oil production going back in the late 80s and early 90s, around 13 million barrels a day, JD.
Huh.
They're lucky now they can produce 9 million barrels and 9 million barrels consistently.
Wow.
So those oil fields are aged, and you know we're at the point now where they're going to start cutting back production right at a time when China is in the second phase of building their infrastructure. And as I said earlier, India is now exactly where China was a decade ago. So we're going to see oil now significantly come out of Iran. We're going to see oil come out of Russia. And I think the caveat, what most people don't understand, China and India are willing to pay for oil with gold.
Right. I think that is a given, which I think, that's why I think all of this stuff is so interconnected, you know.
Well, if China and India are willing to pay for oil with gold, what does that say as to the price of a barrel of oil? It says that if it's priced outside of gold, it's going to cost a lot more.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so looking at that list of things that we talked about with the derivative, you know, the outstanding derivative market, the Forex fraud that's going on, the dollar index manipulation that's happening, the potential for another mortgage.
Securities is another oily
rag. Right. Yeah, what else is on? What else should we have on this list that we haven't added to it yet? And which of those things do you think is has the most propensity to cause a drastic change going forward?
Well, I think when you look at a lot of municipalities, and as you know, Meredith Whitney thought we'd see many more municipalities, you know, fail and or file for bankruptcy protection. Mm-hmm. And she was right. We did see a number of them, not as many as she certainly forecast. And I think another oily rag could be, as interest rates start to go back up and the dollar starts to weaken and the equity markets start a long overdue correction, we could see a flood of these municipalities throwing the towel.
And what would that entail?
Well, it's going to entail, I think, significant social changes within these municipalities, and certainly it's going to feed its way down to the man in the street. Mm-hmm. And I think he's finally going to realize that things cannot continue as they have in the past. You know, we got more people now on welfare than we actually have employed. You know that?
I did know that. I was going to ask you what, in your research, is the actual real unemployment number in our country?
I think the real unemployment number, and again, I think we go back to the shadow statistics by John Williams, which, you know, I would certainly encourage everyone to take the time to look at. He believes the true unemployment's right around 23%, JD.
Oh, my goodness. So you would have to classify that then as an additional oily rag in the room then, wouldn't you?
Well, we currently have 93 million people that are not being considered in the workforce, 93 million people.
That's insane. And then how do you, I read in your, I think it was the October newsletter, made a comparison or was talking about the comparison between the employment rate that they're reporting to us versus the people who are actually participating in the job market. And there seems to be a pretty big discrepancy there, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think when you look at the labor participation rate, and this is a key statistic that I think you can put validity into and I think people should certainly review, we've got the labor participation rate now down to the lowest level since 1977. And if we were to take it lower from here, we'd have to go all the way back to 1948. So we have the lowest number of people who could be considered to be part of the workforce actually working.
Now,
what does that say?
I don't know. What does it say?
Because we're in trouble.
Yeah, to say the least. To say the least. You know, and what's startling to me is that, you know, the way that they classify or the way they count these people, you know, after a year, they drop you off the registers of like you don't even count at all, which is why they're able to keep these numbers so low, you know, in the mainstream. But I myself am trying to figure out what the economic ramifications are of continuing to provide welfare to these people, because it seems to me like that, I mean, if all these people are spending their money, their welfare stuff at, you know, places like Walmart, then corporations like Walmart would have a very big vested interest in keeping that welfare system going, wouldn't they?
Well, you know, I wrote recently in the October issue of the newsletter five things that will not change when we count on continuing in our economy. I'd like to name them quickly for your listeners.
Please do.
Now, these are five things that will not change. One, war will continue, but will not be either won or lost. Number two, both debt and currency creation will continue to rise. Number three, gold, silver, crude oil, and food prices will also continue to rise. Number four, the number of Americans on food stamps will also continue to rise. And fifthly, Americans working full-time in jobs will also continue to decline.
Well, you're just a ray of sunshine, aren't you, Joseph?
Well, we've got to tell people what they need to know, why they need to know it, and lastly, what they can and should be doing about it.
Right.
You know, I've said many times, when you want to help people, you tell them the truth. When you want to help yourself, you tell them what they want to hear.
Yeah.
My newsletter is not going to tell you what I want you to hear or what you think you want to hear. I'm going to tell you what matters. I'm going to tell you why it matters. And I'm going to tell you what you can and should be doing about it.
Mm-hmm. And again, Joseph's website is straightmoneyanalysis.com. Is there a way for people to get directly in touch with you, Joseph? Are you comfortable with that?
I'm always comfortable. We take emails. We take calls from our subscribers. If they have questions about the newsletter and they need to speak to me, we're always here, certainly, to clarify any points that we've spoken to in a recent issue of the newsletter. We have done that from the very first issue, and we'll continue to do it, JD.
I say you always answer my phone calls, and I always seem like I'm taking up more of your time than I should be allowed to, but I definitely do enjoy speaking with you and trying to get my head.
Well, we have the knowledge, we have the experience, we have the track record, we have the expertise, we have the willingness to try to share the knowledge and experience we've accumulated over the decades. Mm-hmm. And I think I write a very different kind of a newsletter. Honestly, I don't think there's another newsletter like it in the country. And then lastly, I have to believe I'm one of the few, if only, newsletter writers that'll take a call from a subscriber.
Oh, I'm sure that that's absolutely true. What I like about the newsletter is that you have a track record. You have the ability to look back and say, hey, this is what I put in writing. Prove me wrong. It absolutely substantiates why your experience is so important.
We were very bearish on the equity markets. We never believed in the economic recovery. As you know, we called it an illusion and a farce from day one, and it right. turned out to be exactly that. Although they have levitated these markets, frankly, far, far higher than we ever would have believed that they could. But even though I was overall bearish on the equity markets, I was bullish on certain sectors of the market. I was bullish on the metals. I was bullish on energy. I was bullish on the railroad stocks. I was bullish on utilities. I liked the drinking water sector. And I felt if you were in these stocks for the right reasons, at least you were in the areas of the market that represented value.
Right.
And I believed when the long-awaited correction would finally set into the market, these individual groups and individual sectors and quality stocks within these groups and sectors would buffer the decline and buffer them better than the overall market. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you brought up water because that would have been one of the last questions I had for you. You've been very bearish on water. I'm sorry, very bullish on water for a long time. And do you still stand behind that right now?
I think we're going to run out of potable drinking water. Again, I don't think it's a question of if. I think it's a question of when. Mm-hmm. I think when we look at certainly the demand for water moving ahead, there isn't any way we're going to be able to meet the demand.
Right.
I believe we're going to see, and I know people are probably going to think I'm crazy, we're going to see a gallon of water at some point sell for more than a gallon of gasoline.
Oh, my goodness. Boy, that's scary to think about, isn't it?
Undervalued, I truly believe it is. But as you know, in a lot of countries around the world, water is such a precious commodity, it costs more than food.
Right, right. Yeah, it's crazy.
And when we look at our polluted streams and rivers and tributaries and we look at our lakes, I mean, we've got a pollution crisis we haven't even begun to address.
I know. It's all oily rags in the room at this point, Joseph, I think.
Another oily rag.
I know. Okay, so we've got about 30 seconds left. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the listeners before we have to let you go?
Well, I think this is an extraordinary time. I think it's an unprecedented time. I think you need a plan. You need a plan to deal with the uncertainty that's ahead in all these markets. I think you and I addressed the oily rags and why we think they can certainly turn this thing upside down. And I think while these markets are rising, this is the exact time you put your plan in place, you raise some cash, you limit your risk of being in the market any further with close stops under your long positions.
Okay.
And I think you prepare for some turmoil and some real volatility in the months and years ahead. Jason.
Joseph, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It
the
was Apple's a pleasure.
The Apple's iPhone 5S has been very successful in the U.S., but we realize that people here in India cannot afford the iPhone. That's why we've decided to work closely with the Apples to bring the iPhone experience to India. We call it the iPhone 5X. The iPhone 5X was built with advanced new hardware. The phone runs on the new Apple's A10 Snapdragon 7870HD 2-liter turbo Galaxy 29GHz processor. Our advanced operating system features some of the best apps out there. We have classics such as Instant Gram, Samosa Crush Saga, World of Duty, Call of Warcraft, and Temple Run, in which you get to run from an actual mob of Hindu priests.
And to wrap it all up, we have 24/7 customer service lines in case you idiots need help with your new iPhones.
Hello, welcome to iPhone tech support. This is Ben Katesh.
Are you sure you're not one of those outsourced white people?